Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There's a crisis in public education, and when the Southern Baptist Convention meets next week, one of the big questions is whether or not the messengers to the convention will face a resolution that has to do with public education, and one in particular that suggests that Christian parents should consider removing their children from the public schools. I think it raises one of those key front-burner issues that all Christian parents need to consider. We're going to have as our special guest in the second segment, Dr. Vadi Balcom, who is one of the proponents, the initiators of this effort, and we'll be hearing from him what is behind it and where he sees this whole question going. It's going to be a fascinating discussion, and get ready. We're going to learn a lot in the next hour. First of all, we need to review some of the issues in the news. The Terri Schiavo autopsy report was released yesterday. We talked about that in the opening to the program on yesterday, and I drew your attention to a Washington Post news article that began with a tragic, and I'll repeat that, a very tragic opening paragraph. That particular article began by saying, Terri Schiavo died of the effects of a profound and prolonged lack of oxygen to her brain on a day in 1990, but what caused that event isn't known and may never be, said the physician who performed her autopsy. Now, what's interesting is, after several of us no doubt drew attention to that particular paragraph, and the cause of our concern is that this reporter seems to be implying that Terri Schiavo died back in 1990 and has been basically dead, was dead for a period of something like 15 years between that brain injury and when she eventually died of court-ordered dehydration on March 31st of this year. But it is interesting that in the print edition of the Washington Post available today and in the online edition, there is a new lead to the story that tells a very different sequence of events and implies a very different reality. This is what it says now. Terri Schiavo suffered severe, irreversible brain damage that left that organ discolored and scarred, shriveled to half its normal size, and damaged in nearly all its regions, including the one responsible for vision, according to an autopsy report released yesterday. Now, we need to look a little deeper at this story. And one of the things we need to watch, well, we need to watch the editorial pages of the major newspapers, because we're going to see a revisitation of this story, of this tragedy. And those that were pushing for the removal of her feeding tube and the removal of her hydration, they're going to be arguing that this autopsy just affirms everything they were saying all along. For instance, I heard just in the last few hours some who said, look, this autopsy proves that she was in a persistent vegetative state. Two problems with that assertion. Number one, an autopsy cannot determine a mental consciousness. An autopsy has to deal with physical realities, physical evidence, the body. The kind of analysis that would make a distinction between a minimally conscious state and a persistent vegetative state, that is something that cannot be determined by an autopsy. The second problem with that assertion is this, and I have to come back to this again and again and again, even if she was accurately described as being in a persistent vegetative state, that does not mean that she should be denied food and hydration. That does not mean that she was dead, and it does not mean that she was subhuman. Ladies and gentlemen, the debate goes on, but you can already see in the editorial pages of newspapers such as the New York Times and the Washington Post a clear statement, well, this proves that we were right all along, that only a band of religious fanatics would have been suggesting that Terri Schiavo should have been kept alive and given food and water. Human Events Magazine went to a group of historians and conservative thinkers and asked them to list, in order, the 10 most harmful books of the last two centuries. And that immediately attracted my attention. That's an interesting little thought experiment, isn't it? Come up with the most harmful books, the 10 most harmful books of the last 200 years. The list that came back, weighted by the survey returns, was this. Number one, the most dangerous book, The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx. Secondly, Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. Third, Quotations from Chairman Mao by Mao Zedong. Fourth, The Kinsey Reports by Alfred Kinsey. Fifth, Democracy and Education by John Dewey. You're going to hear his name in this program. Sixth, Das Kapital by Karl Marx. Seventh, The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. Eighth, The Course of Positive Philosophy by Auguste Comte. 9, Beyond Good and Evil by Friedrich Nietzsche, and 10, The General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money by John Maynard Keynes. Well, that's an interesting list, isn't it? My response is, I think every one of those 10 books brought enormous, incalculable harm to human beings over the last 200 years. But if I were arranging this list, I'd have to mention at least two titles that didn't make the top 10. I think their list is a little weighted towards economics. I want to know, where is Charles Darwin on The Origin of Species, on The Descent of Man? When you think about the impact upon the worldview of our age, how can you miss Charles Darwin? Because the evolutionary worldview of materialistic naturalism, that is the worldview that represents one of the greatest competitors to Christian faith, to one of the greatest challenges to Christian truth in our day. And moral relativism. Now, certainly you could go back to Beyond Good and Evil by Friedrich Nietzsche, but I think in our culture you could argue that Margaret Mead's book, Coming of Age in Samoa, had a more direct influence on the fact that Americans now largely embrace moral relativism, at least when it comes to issues of sexuality and lifestyle and all the rest. You can go to my blog at albertmuller.com, and you can find an entry with this list and my response, and I'd like to hear from you. I asked the question on the blog, what do you think? And I've had some interesting suggestions made over the last several hours from viewers and listeners about books that should be listed on the top 10 most harmful books of the last two centuries. To add your suggestion, just go to the website and tell us what you think. We'll revisit this in a few days and talk about the books that didn't make the list that you think should have made the list. Roger Rosenblatt is a commentator and essayist for NewsHour for PBS. In a very interesting essay that is available both in written and in audio form at the PBS website, Mr. Rosenblatt identifies himself as being surprised at the prevalence of religious faith, especially of Christian faith, among Americans today. He says, as a secular Jew, a distinction in Judaism as unspectacular as that of a lapsed Catholic, it fascinates me how religious the world seems to be growing, or if not growing, at least showing a religious face more boldly. He points to the public attention to the funeral of Pope John Paul II, the election of Pope Benedict XVI. He points to the rise of Islam in terms of world politics and to the emergence of more assertive forms of Judaism. And then he says this, were I an atheist or agnostic, I might feel isolated or even imperiled by such a turn of events. My faith being real but inquiring, I'm more curious than anything else. History often displays periods of overheated religious activity as heading towards wars and mass murder. Leaving those dire possibilities in abeyance, I simply don't know what to make of the phenomenon. It's not that one can't come up with reasons. All the manifestations are arising at a time of insistent individualism, shown in everything from the iPod and bloggers to efforts toward the perfectibility of one's appearance, one's health, one's sex life. So religion may offer the countervailing force of community and of dependence on a higher perfection. End quote. But listen to how he ends it. He says that he doesn't know what to make of this phenomenon. He says religion may be on the rise because of secularists like myself, who, it may be thought, have been in charge of public life too long. We certainly don't feel in charge these days. Well, honest reflections from an honest man are always to be welcomed. And in this case, we should appreciate Roger Rosenblatt for his honesty and for the thoughtfulness of this essay published at the PBS website. Of course, from the vantage point of a believing Christian, the world looks very different. But I can understand why someone in his position would be scratching the head, wondering what's going on in the world. Christians are still around. Christian belief is still very much found among those who hold to the Christian faith. And the acids of secularism and the impact of modernity has not erased Christianity. He wonders why. I find it remarkable that he would be so honest on this website, and we should appreciate his honesty. There are other issues in the news, of course. Sometimes we're simply surprised when something emerges as a news story in itself. In the style section of today's New York Times, there is a headline story, Going to the Therapist en route to the Altar. The subtitle, More Cohabitating Couples in Their 20s and 30s Seek Counseling to Avoid Plunging into Marriage's Pitfalls. That's right. We've gone from marriage and married people needing marriage counselors to people who are cohabitating but not yet married who are having to get counselors to avoid the same kind of problems that married people had. Now, the epidemic of cohabitation is just becoming something taken for granted by many young people today. You take the generation of people in their 20s and their 30s, and many of them just assume that cohabitation is a phase of life. What they want, of course, is the sexual relationship, the intimacy, and the living together without the sacred bonds of marriage, without the responsibility, without the public pledge without the covenant till death do we part. But you know, this is just one more evidence that you can't have this little false and artificial reduction of marriage without having the same kind of problems you would face, only without the accountability, without the institutional boundaries, and without the support system. Interesting evidence that comes to the New York Times on the style page of all things. You know, the evidence is that cohabitation undermines the integrity of marriage, not just as a theory, but in individual couples' experience. Those who cohabitate prior to marriage report less happy marriages than those who do not. Surprise you? It shouldn't surprise the church. We'll be back to talk about private education, public education, and parental responsibility. I'm Albert Mohler. Well, the Southern Baptist Convention is getting ready to meet in Nashville, Tennessee. Several thousand messengers, that's what the delegates to the SBC are known, are headed towards Nashville, and there will be a lot of deliberation going on, a lot of reports given, and already there is a lot of focus on the issue of public education. It's the second year that the SBC has faced some debate and discussion over public education. Last year, two Southern Baptists submitted a proposed resolution that would have called for Christian parents to withdraw their children from the public schools, identifying the schools as godless and basically anti-Christian, and suggesting that the parental responsibility was to take the kids out of the public schools. That didn't make it to the floor. This year, there is another resolution. It's being brought suggesting that the issue of homosexuality now represents something of a clear and present threat to the public schools, and that Christian parents should consider what's being taught, sponsored, advocated, and allowed in their public school district. And if they discover anything that suggests a homosexual agenda, they should withdraw their children. Now, this resolution is being submitted by an evangelist by the name of Vody Bauckham and Bruce Short, an attorney in Houston, Texas. And we are very glad to have, now from Georgia, on our program as our guest today, Dr. Vody Bauckham. Now, Dr. Bauckham, and you look at this whole question, can you just tell me what's behind your particular concern?
First of all, let me just say thank you so much for the privilege of being on with you. I absolutely love your show and listen to it every chance I get. What's behind my participation in this, as I approached Bruce Short and we prayerfully considered putting this forward, was really, as you said, the clear and present danger represented by the aggressive homosexual agenda within our schools. It is, not only is it aggressive, but it is also open. And I mean, it's covert in some ways, but it's overt in others. And parents just seem to either not care or to be completely unaware of what their children are being taught and how they're being conditioned in the schools.
Well, Dr. Bauckham, I have a lot of respect for your ministry. And when I saw that you were involved in this, out of my respect for you, I wanted to pay close attention to this particular motion. And I saw that in the argument that it presents, it suggests that, well, maybe I don't want to read too much into it, but let me suggest a theory, and you tell me if I'm right.
Okay.
I think that that this resolution is getting at the basic problem in the public schools, but is acknowledging that the issue of homosexuality is kind of, say, a fuse on the middle of a bomb of controversy here. And the school's involvement in the homosexuality agenda actually betrays many other involvements and ideological commitments as well. Am I right here?
You hit the nail right on the head. That is absolutely correct. What's happening is that the homosexual agenda is not just an isolated incident. It is just perhaps the most obvious and the most aggressive, the most pernicious of all the things that schools are perpetrating on our children.
Now, Dr. Bauckham, you have three children, you and your wife. You have a teenager and two younger children.
Yes.
What kind of educational choices have you made as a parent? How are you fulfilling your own responsibility here?
We homeschool our children, actually. Our children started out in a private Christian school. My wife was a public school teacher. And so from the beginning, public school was not an option for us. Like many public school teachers who actually send their kids to private school at a rate twice that of the regular population, we decided that that was not going to happen. It says a lot about something when somebody's willing to pay money not to use their own product. So that was the decision that we made early on. Homeschooling is something that came about a little bit later in the process.
Well, I think your story would be basically paralleled by many other Christian parents. And, in fact, my wife and I, we started out with our children in a Christian school, very fine Christian school. And then now we have them in a combination of a consortium with formal classroom teaching and also a lot of home experience as well.
Right.
And I think that's one of the indications that parents really need to think through.
Absolutely.
As Christians, this whole thing, and understand that, first of all, the Scripture says that we as parents have a responsibility for the education of our children. We can't franchise out to anyone.
Right.
Even though the different parents will come up with different partners here.
Right.
Dr. Bochum, you know, there is some controversy related to this. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you. You know, have you been surprised in any way by the response of Southern Baptists to the proposal that you put forth?
Well, you know, I have. And the irony is we have been bombarded with support from outside. There are over 60 organizations that have signed on in support of this resolution from outside. But from within, for various reasons, there seems to be a great deal of resistance. And I think part of it is that last year's resolution, and somehow people are not sure how to look at this resolution as it relates to last year's resolution, although it's different even on its face. It's different than the other, but I think a lot of the resistance comes from people not being able to differentiate.
Well, let me tell you where I'm headed here, Dr. Bochum. I literally believe that that Southern Baptists are just not ready to face this. I think they should be, but I think we're not. I think as a people, we can understand some reasons why. I think, for one thing, in different contexts, the public schools look very different from where they may appear just somewhere else. And what I'm going to talk about on the program today is that there is a national context we have to have in mind, those who control and shape the future of public education. But I think there are a lot of Southern Baptists who look and say, look, I have my friends on the school board. My wife is a school teacher. You know, my best friend is a school principal. What are you telling me there's an anti-Christian bias? and so I understand that. And that's why I think, it's only a matter of time. You know, Dr. Bochum, I honestly believe it's just a matter of time before Southern Baptists are awakened to this. And so I'm issuing a public call as of today and tomorrow for Southern Baptists to start developing an exit strategy in terms of the public schools, to understand that the first thing we need to do is start talking about this. We need to start educating parents. We need to be vigilant in the public schools. But I'll just tell you right up front, long term, unless there is some kind of massive social revolution in America, I don't see any way this can be corrected. The influence of the National Education Association, the educational elites, the education schools, government mandates, and all the rest, I just don't see any rescue, do you?
No, I really don't. And a statement you made a few weeks ago in your program has just resonated with me. I believe you were talking about the pharmacists who were being forced to hand out the abortion pill.
That's right.
And you made the statement that our culture is, you know, hurling down the highway toward destruction, and we may have just missed the last off-ramp. I will never forget that statement. But I think in many ways the school system is the epicenter of that whole process.
Well, I think you're right. And I think it also hits very close to home for Christian families and Christian parents. And we're going to have a fascinating discussion. Listeners, it's time for you to call and join. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We want you to join the conversation. I want to know how you as Christian parents respond to this. Do you think it's a radical, extremist idea to suggest that we need as Christians to develop an exit strategy from the public schools? And let's be very clear. I'm thankful there are so many Christians involved as school board members and teachers and administrators. And I'm not saying walk out the door. I'm saying we need to have a long-term perspective, recognizing that we simply can't deny either our biblical responsibility or the secularist reality that is now represented more and more in terms of the public school regime. It has been a thrill to have Dr. Vadi Bochum on this program, and Dr. Bochum is a great evangelist with deep theological conviction and passion, and he is a father and a husband as well. Dr. Bochum, it's been a real privilege to have you.
Bless you, brother. Thank you so much.
Well, I will see you in Nashville, Tennessee.
I look forward to it.
We'll gather with a few thousand of our closest friends right there in Music City for the Southern Baptist Convention. Folks, this is an issue we just can't get around. We're not going to be able to avoid it. There is some sense that maybe the easiest thing would be to delay, but I don't think we can delay this for long. As a matter of fact, I think it's a matter of seconds, and you're going to be ready to call. 877-893-8255. Live from Louisville, Kentucky, we're putting truth on the line. I'm Albert Moeller.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The issue is Christian parents and the public schools. And the particular catalyst for today's discussion is the upcoming meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention, an assembly that may or may not confront a resolution having to do with the public schools and parental responsibility. The same thing is evidently true for the Presbyterian Church in America, the PCA, Conservative and Evangelical Presbyterian Denomination, meeting in Chattanooga, Tennessee these days. And I had the opportunity to be there for the opening day and to deliver an address at a conference related to that meeting. And they're also going to be confronted by a resolution, although it is not clear whether the assembly will take any action or not. We'll be watching that. The PCA General Assembly concludes on Friday as the Southern Baptist Convention begins just a few days later, just one city over in Tennessee, in Nashville. So it looks like central Tennessee is something of an epicenter for discussing the issue of Christian parents and the public schools. But nationwide, I want to know what you think. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Let's go to Dave calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Dave, go right ahead.
Oh, hi, Dr. Mohler. I was just telling your screener that my question had to do with what you just mentioned about the Presbyterian Church in America, and I was just wondering if you had heard that news, but it sounds like you were kind of involved in that.
Well, I wasn't involved in the resolution. I was there for the opening day as I had some responsibilities there, but, you know, I'll tell you this. I think if you take two denominations that are very, very similar in terms, you know, really, really very closely allied in terms of theological and worldview issues, you look at the SBC and the PCA, and there they are meeting just, you know, less than 200 miles apart and just a few days apart. Dave, what do you think is behind all this? Are you supportive of this kind of resolution?
Oh, I really am, and unfortunately right now, we just finished the first school year with my kids in a government school, and that was due to economics. My daughters are 10 years old and 8 years old, and they had been in a Christian school up until this year, and we're trying to come up with an alternative. We tried homeschooling. That didn't really work out very well for our family, but I know it's a great alternative. So we're trying to – we're even thinking about relocating just so that we can get ourselves in a better financial position to re-enroll our daughters in Christian school.
Dave, I really want to applaud and affirm your sense of fatherly and parental responsibility there. I like the way you're talking, and I think that ought to encourage an awful lot of our listeners to think through the issue as well. You know, what kind of lifestyle changes might many of us have to make in order to make the education of our children what it should be? Now, folks, let me just say right up front, this is one of those issues that brings out a lot of emotional volatility. And, for instance, I am the product of the public schools, at least in terms of my education, first grade through 12th grade. I never spent an hour in anything other than a public school. I'm indebted to so many public school teachers who invested themselves in me. But, you know, even in my high school years in the mid-1970s, I was able to detect a real worldview war that was going on around me. But I was in one of those school districts in America, a metropolitan school district in a fast-changing area, where those changes may have been apparent long before elsewhere. And I recognize that right now there are many brave and faithful Christians at work as parents, PTA members, as administrators, school board members, and teachers. And this discussion is not meant to depreciate in any way their contribution nor their brave service. But it is to ask the question long-term. How are we to think about this as Christians long term? Should the Christian church develop a strategy for assuming this responsibility on its own and certainly in fulfillment of its own basic commission and responsibilities and our task of preparing parents to take on this responsibility as well? I think the answer to that is yes. I'll just make my convictions very, very clear. And that may be unpopular in many circles. I just can't see any way around it. And I want to tell you, I think in the background of this is the fact that the church basically surrendered so much of this educational terrain to the government schools when it was pretty unanimously safe to do so. And I want to recognize that the public schools have made an enormous contribution in America. The public schools have had an enormous impact in bringing together children from different ethnic, language, racial, and economic classes. and building a democratic people, a citizenry out of this. The great tragedy is that all that has been largely displaced by an ideological agenda that is openly hostile to Christianity. In a commentary I'm publishing tomorrow morning, I think people are going to remember this one. I retrace the history of the public schools and how we arrived at this impasse. You take someone like John Dewey, the most influential figure in public education in America, who explicitly said that the task of the common schools or the government schools should be to replace parental authority and Christianity with a new common citizenry and a new common faith. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll come back with your conversation. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back. We knew this was going to be an interesting conversation, and all the phone lines have been blinking for the last few minutes, definitely, as we've gotten into this issue. And there's still an opportunity for you to call 877-893-8255. Just a few years ago, Dr. James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family, found himself in some controversy, but he didn't back down a bit when he called upon the parents of California, Christian parents, to remove their kids from the California public school system. There were particular mandates that came down from the state school system that were just totally opposed to Christian values. And it was not a nationwide call, just targeted for California. And Dr. Dobson said, you know, I think Christian parents need to really look at alternatives. And you would have thought he had just called for dismantling, I think, every building in America or something, or going back to, you know, riding horses rather than driving cars. It was such a radical thing in the ears of many people. But, you know, I don't think a week passes, probably not a day, that a large number of Christian parents aren't coming to very similar conclusions, forced by the evidence and personal experience, and perhaps even by observing and listening to their own children, that they've got to make some choices. Do you realize right now that there was a study done among Southern Baptists showing that we lose the majority of the teenagers who graduate from secular schools? We lose them. They do not remain among us. They abandon Christianity. That ought to be a wake-up call in and of itself. Let's go to Melissa calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Melissa, what do you make of all this?
Well, I have to admire Dr. Dobson for making that call. I mean, I'm sure he was persecuted a little bit after that from speaking that kind of truth. You know, when my parents were children, they actually had the Bible taught to them in public schools in Erie, Pennsylvania. But I think I think it was great last year when the Southern Baptist Convention came up with the idea of making that pronouncement, and I'm sort of disappointed that they backed down. They probably didn't want to offend anybody. And I think they need to do this, and I don't think homosexuality should be the issue. It's everything. There's so much godlessness in these schools. I mean, they're learning Darwinism as a fact. So I think they need to do it, and if they offend some parents, maybe they'll convict their hearts also, and that will work on them. And eventually, I mean, do they want to lose these children's souls for eternity?
Well, Melissa, let me ask you a question. I know you're located in the Tampa Bay area. Do you have kids in the schools?
I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they're in Christian school. And now but some of the doctrines in these Christian schools may not be exactly biblical. I mean, we have them in a Lutheran school. We changed them to a non-denominational school, and I'm still not completely convinced. But you know what? Mommy teaches them the Bible at home, and that's something parents should do also.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, Melissa is calling from Tampa Bay. That's the Florida West Coast, and I was born very close to that. I went to a school in Polk County, the neighboring county, as a matter of fact, from Hillsborough, where she is. I also went to high school in Broward County, Florida, in the public schools there, and there was an incredible difference. I mean, we just moved about 200 miles, but we shifted an enormous worldview. Even back in the early 1970s, moving from Polk County, Florida to Broward County, Florida, I can remember my first week in the classroom in the eighth grade, moving to a new place, and how shocked I was by the lifestyles I confronted, by the language that I heard, by what I smelled coming out of the bathroom, which was not tobacco. It was an illicit weed. And all this kind of going on, and I hadn't confronted anything like that before. That was all new to me. And then I started seeing the worldview clash going on in the classroom as well. And I think Melissa's call reminds us that people in different parts of the country may see a different reality. You know, if you're in small-town America, the public school reality may look very different, and it may be very different for now. The question is, who's shaping the future? There are federal mandates. There are policies from the Department of Education. There are the shaping influences of the education schools, and we could go into that, and we will in a future program, really dissect what's going on there. And then there is the stranglehold of the National Education Association, the NEA, the labor union for teachers, the biggest of them. And all these things are militating against the values that Christian parents hold most dear. Let's go to Craig calling from Des Moines, Iowa. Craig's listening on KFFF. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, the one comment I guess I wanted to make, I mean, there's really two approaches I look at this. You can either pull the kids out of school, or the other side is it better to keep your kids in school with the thought that the more kids that pull out, the worse yet the schools will get? And my thought is, do you think it's of more value for someone to keep their kids in and really fight for changes to get the schools back to the way they used to be? I have my first 5-year-old going to kindergarten this fall, and I know there's going to be struggles. There's going to be times it'll be difficult, but I guess I just look at maybe the high road being keep those kids in there, and you know, God doesn't give up on us, and I guess I hate to give up on our public school system and just write it off.
Yeah, well, Craig, I can understand that, and I think your argument will resonate with a lot of people, especially depending on where they live and what they see in the public schools. But I will say this, you know, I don't think we can hand our children over to a school system that represents the kind of danger that many school districts really do. And I can't speak about where you are and exactly what your child may confront, but I would just encourage you to be very, very wary. You know, we have the evidence that what happens when children get into a school situation is that their peer context changes, their definition of normal, their boundary ideas begin to change. And you may not notice this so much in a 5-year-old, a kindergartner. But, you know, right now, all you have to do is look at a poll, for instance, on the issue of same-sex marriage. And just consider this. Those age 60 and above are responding in most polls by numbers of upwards of 70% opposed to same-sex marriage. But if you go to 18 and younger, you can almost reverse those statistics. Now, what explains that? I'm going to tell you right up front. I think that the idea, the concept of normal, the peer pressure and all the rest that comes in the school context has an awful lot to do with that. You can't blame the universities and the colleges for this directly because those kids aren't there yet. You can blame MTV and all the rest, and of course that plays a part. But I just can't believe that those who are trying to use the public schools as the engines for changing the worldview of America and redefining normal, I can't believe that they're not right, that if you can control the public schools, you can really control the future. Very quickly, we're going to go to Scott calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Scott, go right ahead.
Hey, how are you today? I just wanted to share some insight. You know, both my daughter just graduated from high school. Awesome kid. She grew up in a Christian home. I'm a product of the California public school system. I've been in Florida since 79. You know, unfortunately, in our area, a lot of the Christian schools have similar problems, if not more so, than the public schools. And to me, it's the bottom line is the parents' involvement. We as Christian leaders in our community and as parents, we've got to set the example and be there with our kids 100%.
Well, I understand that, Scott. I wonder what the limits on that are, though, in terms of just how involved parents can be. I could take you to Massachusetts, where a father was told he can't even come on the school grounds anymore because he wanted to get involved in protecting his son from a radical sex education program. This is going to be an ongoing conversation. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This has been a fascinating discussion. I think we've probably just seen the tip of the iceberg, and we're going to be talking about this for months, probably years to come, because I think what's going to happen is that momentum is going to be building and building towards this kind of an idea. I think more and more parents are going to come to understand that they face a difficult choice. I think that increasing number of churches are going to begin to assume responsibility to help prepare parents to make informed choices and to have a support system in terms of education. I don't think we're going to see a mass exodus of Christians over the next 12 months from the public schools. But let's face it, we've been seeing a mass exodus for the last 2 decades. One of the biggest demographic markers in America over the last 20 years is the mass exodus from the public schools, the rise of Christian schools. And one of the most significant social movements in America is the rise of homeschooling. All this points to something very, very basic and fundamental happening at the level of American culture. Our society is shifting on the issue of education. The idea of a common school, a government tax-supported school, is now giving way to the idea of parental authority and parental responsibility. And, folks, that's good news. In my article that will be posted just after midnight tonight, it will be available at crosswalk.com, and you can get it most directly at albertmoeller.com. That's A-L-B-E-R-T-M-O-H-L-E-R.com. You'll find my full argument set out. I take you back in an historical review to a man I identified earlier in the program, John Dewey. He was first and foremost at the University of Chicago, later at Columbia University. He was the most significant and influential figure in shaping public education in the last century. In his book, A Common Faith, published in 1934, John Dewey advocated a radically secular vision for the public schools and the larger public culture. His concept of a humanistic faith, stripped of all supernatural claims, doctrines, and theological authorities, would replace Christianity as the dominant culture-shaping worldview. He said this: "Here are all the elements for a religious faith that shall not be confined to sect, class, or race. Such a faith has always been the common faith of mankind. It remains for us to make it explicit and militant." End quote. Well, it's taken longer than John Dewey expected, but this secularist faith is certainly explicit and militant in our times. This is not equally true in all places and in all public schools, but it is true in terms of the larger trend. I go back to what I said earlier. I think that momentum is building towards a sense of urgency and an agenda for change. I think that more and more Christian parents are awakening to what we really face. We need to pray for those brave and courageous Christians who are teaching and leading and administering in the public school system. We need to pray that they will have courage and insight and effect, influence. We need to take responsibility for training and educating our own children. We'll give an answer to God for that. And we have that on scriptural authority. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the revolution in fatherhood. I'm Albert Moeller.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.